Now it's time for the second hour of the Futures.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back to the show. For this hour, we're taking a local issue a step further by showing you how perhaps there might finally be a solution to something that's been irking many of us for many a year now. And that involves the 32-mile-long rail corridor across our county from Davenport all the way down to Watsonville. For a long time, there's been a contention as to whether or not that should be a walking path, a street path for bicycles, for joggers, maybe electric bikes. And there are people that want trains. They still want a train there and some kind of easy commute for us to get between various parts of our community without having to sit in that clogged Highway 1 that probably many of you are on right now. So, a couple of our local citizens and friends of ours have taken this to heart and have worked on a solution for this that may be coming to a head this week. Ryan Sanatoro and Karina McFarland, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you guys, I think it's probably best that you introduce Jim for us and how you brought him in. He's the next layer to this and how we're going to come to a solution here. Now, you guys took this on as a community issue.
Yes.
And have moved it forward.
We have been following the rail corridor issue, and I had sat in on many city council meetings and RTC meetings, most often silently, and I started to feel like, wouldn't it be amazing if we could have a real conversation where we could flush out what's really important here and what do people really feel here and how do you get what's assumptions and what's facts and what's possible? And I have been tracking the work of Jim Ruff for probably more than a decade.
Now, he's someone that could maybe solve this, because it seems like it's very contentious to have a vehicle or not have a vehicle, like a train, on this corridor. And
well, my favorite story from Jim Ruff's work, and he has helped people do wisdom council and something called dynamic facilitation, and he has a non-profit called the Center for Wise Democracy.
Okay.
And I love this story where two Austrian guys came over from the region of Vorarlberg, and they are part of the local government, and they're from a department called the Office for Future Related Issues. So they were looking for, how do you have truly participatory democracy that where really the citizens can bring their wisdom and it could really bring us forward? And so they came and trained with Jim Ruff in dynamic facilitation and wisdom council, took it back to Austria, and it's been so effective there. They used it to help deal with their influx of Syrian refugees.
And how to deal with the immigration issue.
Yes, and so for me, what's the joy of this is that in a wisdom council, what could be distilled is the terror that we might have our way of life destroyed and the very real we want to have a humanitarian response to a displaced people. And both things could come forward. And out of that, there's an elevating, the Einstein shift, that the problem won't be solved from where it was started. So suddenly there's a shift of consciousness and there's a breakthrough that everybody experiences, no matter what their political persuasion. So that is Jim Ruff mastery.
Wow.
And he's coming to Santa Cruz
to help us.
Bring a spark
of insight into this. Yes.
And in fact, he's listening and he's on the phone
ready to jump in.
Yes,
are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Jim.
All right, Jim. All right.
Welcome to
all right.
the show.
Yeah, thank you. That's quite an introduction for you there.
Well, I like the way that Karina talked about it. Beautiful. I am always struggling for words.
Well, you guys are going to be working together shortly, I believe. Maybe you could tell us about that.
Well, it's Karina. I'm coming down to teach a three-day seminar in the core of this process, which is dynamic facilitation. It's really a way of thinking that we can facilitate. In other words, one kind of thinking is what the founders set up for us of the United States, is where we kind of have this, quote, discussion and adversarial battling, red team versus blue team.
Checks and balances.
But you, that's right.
Is this more like a round table where you bring everyone of all persuasions to the table?
Well, you do, but except it's not, the round part doesn't work.
I see. Hopefully not a battlefield. Chess game?
No, it's better to set it up as a half circle, really.
A half circle, so what, okay.
Yeah, so what's happening is that the facilitator is helping everybody to just speak, and they don't need to be trained ahead of time, or they can just speak their mind. But the facilitator keeps four charts in front so that everybody speak whatever anybody says, it kind of fits on the charts, and we help people speak from their heart as much as possible.
Nice. Yeah.
And what it begins to happen is people begin to realize that they're working on something together, kind of shoulder to shoulder rather than face to face.
Nice. Yeah. So when they start seeing these charts pile up and they're all contributing to these charts and helping to create this, it becomes a more of a personal creative endeavor for everyone, a shared endeavor in which they personally contributed.
That's right. It's each individual is working at their own issue of wanting to get their will met, but also they're beginning to realize, hey, well, this is a group effort, and actually, some of the ideas people are starting to say really affect me, too, and I'm interested in that also, and I have those concerns as well, and, you know, so eventually people come into a group perspective that where they realize, hey, this is the best, or they have a breakthrough, and everybody jumps up and down and waves their arms and realizes, my God, we never would have gotten here if you weren't so different than me.
Now, do you have a 100% track record of success, or is there potential calamity involved in this process?
That was a good lesson.
It's almost 100% success in terms of people reaching some kind of unity.
Yeah.
The only time it breaks down is when you don't have real people in the room. Like if you have people representing some
point of view,
constituency.
You mean lobbyists? Like, it doesn't work for lobbyists?
Lobbyists or representatives, or sometimes representatives is a word, like, you know, management, representing management and union or whatever. But if you can close the door and have people become human, then we just pretty much always get some kind of unity and some kind of breakthroughs. And we may not all the way get all the way to a solution around.
How hard is it to get people to really be real with each other like that? That must be one of the challenges.
It's so much easier than you might imagine. The thing is
maybe we could do it after the break. We got to go to a commercial break. Can we hold that thought? And we'll be right back with that. Thank you. We're talking to Jim Ruff, talking about the railway corridor solutions. And this is some ideas that Jim's going to be bringing to the table.
All right, we'll be back right after this break.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Feature Show. We're talking to Jim Ruff, founder and president, I believe it's Dynamic Facilitation Associates. And Jim is going to help us figure out a solution to the rail corridor issue. And, you know, Jim, one of the things that a lot of people bring up is that there might be some really big differences between the groups. Like in our case, should there be a train or not? It's like, that's huge, right? I mean, yes or no, 0-1. Is there a way out of that?
Well, yeah. See, the problem, I'm going to scoot around the issue right now, because the problem is our system structures us to think that way.
Oh.
It structures yes, no. Do we pass this law? Do we not? Do we? And then you end up in what we call decision-making.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of decision-making is to really cut away the bad options. It means D means away and decision means cut. So you're doing a judgment thing. So yes, when we structure things as a judgment, you're kind of stuck. That's the end. But when we structure things where we're facing this crisis of people coming together and all having different views and having their emotions be a part of it, but we structure it in a way where everybody's safe, and no matter what they say, is heard and
oh, I see. Okay, so you leave the good and bad, the good and bad at the door, and basically look at the ideas.
Ryan had a question.
When you're dealing with an issue, what do you do when there's a divergence about what the facts are in a situation? When you don't necessarily have a common set of facts.
Those people believe in fake news over there.
In a normal conversation, what we do is we have to resolve those facts. And then we're stuck. Yeah. And we're looking at each other absolutely aghast.
You're all in the same room. You're all in the same room, and you're able to look at the same data, so you're no doubt going to get more on the same page than the rest of us who aren't.
Well, what comes to my mind is the classic phrase of, we can agree to disagree, but then you still haven't really made progress.
There's no progress there. Yeah, I'm trying to draw a distinction between the normal conversation and what we're setting up in the dynamically facilitated room.
Okay, so leave judgments out. Leave judgments. So there's no blame?
Right. We're not doing judgments. So that allows creativity to start happening.
Gotcha.
And once creativity starts happening, you don't need to come to, and you let go of this progression from facts to decisions. We don't have to do that. Hmm. In other words, if we're going to be creative and have a breakthrough, we can just have both points of view up there on the wall and be equally valid and just keep talking, keep thinking.
Yeah.
And what the breakthrough happens independent of, in other words, I try and help people to not go down the rat hole of trying to agree on something. The word agree should never be heard in the setting. Not that you teach people to not say it, they just stop thinking that way.
Hmm. What do you replace it with? What is the goal if not to come to some kind of agreement?
Well, the agreement means some kind of judgment that we're going to all have together. We can't get there. It's not going to happen. The best way to reach, quote, agreement, unquote, only it is an agreement, is to have a breakthrough, is to have some new idea come emergent, and you just sit there and look at one another aghast and realize, well, that's better than what I walked in the room with.
He'll bring in Elon Musk and his boring company and put a tunnel under the railroad.
Exactly. But we set up our systems of thinking and talking so that that's not going to happen.
Right.
We eliminate that possibility.
Yes.
And what we're setting up is a prospect of talking in a way that where we start to have glimmers of that, and shifts happen, and part of the shifts happen emotionally, part of the shifts happen in the realm of ideas, part of the shifts, you know, happen in perspectives, and eventually people just become real people facing this struggle together in the accepting that other people are seeing it differently, and it becomes kind of more of a puzzle, more of a quest.
That everyone's putting together in a way, or solving.
How might you handle an attitude in the group where some people think they're more equal than others?
Well, that's a fun one. What you want is you're going to help everybody be on the just people. And the distinction becomes different because some people show their energy more than others. That's one distinction. But you might also have a boss in the room or some elected official, and everybody's looking at them like what they say really matters.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
But what you want to do is, what we try and do is diffuse that. So we'll go to that person that everybody's looking at first and say, what's your solution? It's more elaborate than that, but basically we want them to what we call purge. Get their answer out and get it up there right away so it's not blocking anything.
Mm, everyone knows it. It becomes overt rather than covert.
Yes, exactly. It's right there on the wall. Anybody can see it. And then we ask him to go a little bit more depth than he's ever thought before. And so all of a sudden he's not just pulling it off the shelf. It should be he or she or anybody. She. But all of a sudden there's a creative act starting to happen where the person's trying to, has to be creative because we've asked questions about what that option looks like in ways they haven't thought yet. And once they make that shift to being creative, other people start maybe even throwing out ideas that might help that.
Yeah.
And then the oppositional points of view can come up as suggestion or solution strategy number two. And eventually you end up with something where everybody gets it, that we're not after one or two. We're after something else.
Mm.
And what would be even better, you know?
Do sometimes the bosses become vulnerable enough to share the things they don't understand about a situation themselves and are willing to admit that?
Yeah, this means if you're going to do this kind of facilitation, you're going to transform the people and the context. So the management structure will, the management system will undergo a transformation because people are being authentic and they're just saying what's going on for them and they're feeling support for that.
Hmm.
If you aren't continuing to have these meetings over time, then people get authentic and then they later get punished for it. We don't want that.
I have to say, I was cycling over to the station here today, and I was thinking of J.L. Chestnut, who was the attorney on the stage at Bioneers. He was friends with MLK, Martin Luther King, and he said on the stage, "We are living in the greatest experiment in democracy in the history of the world." And he said it twice, and I loved it, because basically he's saying, we were given an aspiration to democracy, and we have to figure out what that participatory democracy feels like and looks like, and that's my excitement with what Jim has been doing for the last 20 years, basically.
I love that perspective, and let me just amplify it by saying that one of the major things going on with social media is that there are more affinity groups involved in the conversation, which is why it looks like there's fake news. But actually what you're seeing is so much more participation, that many more points of views are being represented, and all of them are minorities in the discussion. And so that is a democratic phenomenon.
Honestly, my real project is to do a wisdom council process for the globe, for society, global society, and for the nation.
Yeah.
Because this process, the dynamic facilitation is about how do you facilitate a small group. And that is into the spirit of what I call choice creating instead of decision making. So you're in that creative zone. And then, okay, how do we do that for a whole community like Santa Cruz?
Yeah.
How do we have a whole, we the people of Santa Cruz, in one conversation where we're coming up together with what needs to happen with the corridor?
Well, certainly the traffic problem is something everyone is behind, no matter what their political persuasion.
Definitely a unifying aspect of the conversation.
I'm sure that's true.
And it is kind of interesting that our county is also the home to one of the great experiments of creating flying drones that carry people.
There you go.
It's one of the new Silicon Valley innovations.
That's getting outside the box.
Disruptive technology, as we say.
Yes.
So who knows? Maybe some of these ideas will play a role in this, the future of our transpo system.
Well, so what would be great, from my standpoint, is that we have a seminar coming up, and it's a three-day seminar, and hopefully a cadre of people would kind of get this perspective and get excited about it and realize that there's a, what I call the wisdom council process, which is a way to facilitate it for the community. And maybe that kind of action would happen. And then that could be an example for how we do it globally as well.
Nice. Yeah. So microcosm, macrocosm. Right? Start at home with something that we care about personally, and then maybe we can solve the immigration problem or something like that. Well, then, okay. How do you... So we're talking to the public now. A lot of people on our... And our audience are driving back from work. So it's something that's on the mind of the public quite a bit. How can they participate? How can the
process good for about a dozen people. How do we make it relevant for a few tens of thousands?
Or are you choosing a dozen people? How are you choosing the dozen people?
No. The way the Wisdom Council process works, and I'd love people to check out our website for Wise Democracy, and but the wisedemocracy.org, and donate, God, if you could.
wisedemocracy.org, okay.
Yeah, we do a random selection from, say, Santa Cruz County or whatever, and there would just be like 12 people selected randomly, 10 to 16 people.
So people that's chosen randomly, really? From the populace? Or like a juror? Like jurors?
Yeah, it's similar to a jury, except there's no, the jury process is a judgmental process.
Yeah.
And this is a creative process. So what happens in the, actually the jury process ends up with unity, but they have a, and this, never mind, that's a big story. But, but anyway.
Parallel universe.
You guys, we're going to have to go to a break.
Can you hold on a second? We got to go to a news break at the half hour. We'll be back right after that with Jim Ruff, founder and president of Dynamic Facilitations. We're talking about the rail corridor solution.
talking about what can we do here in Santa Cruz. Okay, coming right up.
Okay, we're back on the Dr. Future Show talking to Jim Ruff, founder and president of Dynamic Facilitation. We're speaking with our guests, Ryan Santoro and Karina McFarland, in the studio. We're talking about the rail corridor issue and Jim's approach, which to me seems like a piece to an area that might be called the emotional literacy. Emotional literacy. And during the break, we had a talk about this. Karina, you had some understanding of how Jim's work fits into the overall scope of emotional literacy.
Yes, so I will say that I have done the training with Marshall Rosenberg, the nonviolent communication, and locally I trained with the probation department for restorative justice for juvenile delinquents, and then also with conflict resolution. So this fits into that model of how do we come back at a subject that feels really impossible or contentious and address it in another way. And so what we've done here is created, bring the three-day training where people who have registered for the training, and anyone can register, it's people who feel strongly about the rail corridor in either direction, about rent control, Measure M, about downtown library with the garage on top or not, whatever are the very contentious local issues, great grist for the mill, and Jim says we'll make monster progress if we take any of those very real contentious issues.
Microcosm, macrocosm.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And this seminar is going to be happening the day, what did we say?
It's November 9, 10, 11, which is Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And the venue, it's the Romero Institute.
It's 9 to 5.
Danny Sheehan, Sarah Nelson. Mm-hmm. 9 to 5, 3 days, because that's what it takes to really... It reminds me, actually, I learned to dip candles in Bonnie Doon, and she had us dip the candles, and then she said, all right, that's it, go home and sleep, and when you come back, it'll be more in your body, and you'll be amazed at how well you can dip candles. And I feel like doing this with Jim Ruff, it's like, all right, we'll have a day, and you'll all have a feel of dynamic facilitation, wisdom council process, then you'll go and sleep on it, then you'll come back. Mm-hmm. And on the second evening, there's an extracurricular activity where everyone goes for dinner and come back, and we'll have a wisdom council in the evening in a 90-minute slot where you can really experience how that shift can happen if you elevate how people are thinking.
Mm-hmm. How did it come to be called Wisdom Council? It's a pretty elevated name.
Jim?
It is an elevated name.
Yes, and I heard from the Wisdom Council, this is the solution. Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
And a lot of people balk at it, and I invite them to think of something better, because it's not about assembling wise people. That's not what we're doing. We're randomly selecting people, and we're changing the tone of the conversation to be like what a wisdom council is. So, in other words, the spirit of the wisdom council in the Native American, any Aboriginal culture, is that you gather and you think in this way. You face the big issues of the tribe, and you're doing it in a way that you want everybody on board, and you're doing it in a way that looks to the seventh generation or whatever. And that's exactly what results from this group.
Yes, you.
But it's not the elders. It's random people. It's just the ability of the facilitator to assure the transition from normal decision-making, normal thinking, to what we call choice creating.
I love that you articulated that.
Choice creating.
Yeah, choice creating. Yeah. And I feel like we are intentionally making our future history. That's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And it's really, I think, what the founders of this country enjoyed in a way. They were ostensibly meeting, 55 white guys, you know, in Philadelphia. They were seeking unity. Unity not only of themselves, but of the states and the delegates. They were trying to be creative, and I think George Washington essentially held space for that because he didn't speak.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that for sure. But they weren't random guys trying to dissolve a community decision.
I mean, what happens is that people, when you have that spirit, every time I do a wisdom council, almost, they walk out saying, how did we get these special people? You know, how did you possibly get these special people, the red team, blue team members that were so special?
Yeah.
Well, it turns out, I think, more and more that it's the process, not so much the specialness of the people.
Huh. I would love to focus a little bit on something where you could give us a really clear, a tangible example that you feel has something to teach us. You know, was there a particular success story
that inspired
grounded
you,
your process, or that can serve this community by understanding?
Well, Karina mentioned the dealing with the Syrian refugee issue. Maybe that would be a story. I wasn't there, so I only know of it. What has happened in Vorarlberg, which is one of the 9 states of Austria, is that they have adopted the Wisdom Council process into their constitution. So they now have a regular Wisdom Council every 6 months, and sometimes the governor chooses the issue ahead of time, sometimes the state legislature chooses the issue, and sometimes there's a citizen who gets only 1,000 signatures, and if only with 1,000 signatures, they can mention the issue, they can bring up the issue. It's way less signatures than their initiative process, and it's way less effort. So somehow, anyway, I don't know how it was selected, the issue was the Syrian refugees. They randomly selected from the citizen rolls and registration rolls for voting. I think it was 16 people, might have been more, I can't remember. But anyway, they dynamically facilitated them, and they only meet for like a day and a half when they get this. And they had, it turns out, one of the people said, I came as a refugee at some point. And originally, the issue was kind of a struggle between the two sides, but as the group talked, and they got clear that they had a shift, I guess. The shift was that we are people who would like, these are desperate people, and we're the kind of people that want to help them. And they need us. And that's the most important thing. Now, at the other secondarily, we need to be sure that we don't damage our culture, and we need to make protections and so forth. But they set it up so that, anyway, that's what they said. Then they walk. This group reaches its unity in just a day and a half, and then they walk on stage. And in this case, it's the parliament that they're presenting to. In my view, it should be the people, but it's okay. It's the parliament that they presented to. Mm-hmm.
Gives the government stamp of authority there. It does.
And, mm-hmm. But it was cool. And they, I know that one of the legislators basically said, there is no way any one of us in this chamber could have said that.
Mm-hmm.
And what do they do? One of the things, the reasons why the parliament likes it so much is that they are normally in this kind of struggle as well. They have 4 political parties, but they're struggling. And then they, on Friday afternoon, they'll come into their foyer, their building, and tables are set up. And they all sit around tables and watch the Wisdom Council present their unity.
Did they, in their unity, did they come up with new ideas like how to deal with the potential loss of jobs and increase in crime that could happen from immigrants, you know, that people are afraid of?
No.
I mean, do they bring up the pragmatic issues that people think about?
They said things like, we need to train them in speaking German, and this needs to happen in this and that way.
So they've got to become part of the culture that they're
part of the culture. We need to assimilate only so many. You know, they had a lot of specifics around what they came up with.
Yeah.
And then in what they do in Vorarlberg is that they have what they call a responder meeting. So after they present to the legislature and the public, all of the agencies, the nonprofit agencies that are working with Syrian refugees and the stakeholders that have strong opinions have a meeting. So then they talk about what the Wisdom Council came up with, and that is dynamically facilitated as well. Only in this case, you have representatives there, so it's not as high a quality conversation. Anyway, they use this responder meeting process to continue it. And then in 6 months, they have a random selection on a new issue, which could be land use planning or, you know, just different things.
So it seems like the kind of process that is being facilitated almost as a proof of concept so that people in the decision-making governmental bodies get some focus group awareness on particular issues that are funneled into this process. And then the process basically elevates the conversation so that instead of just being contentious and adversarial. It is choice-oriented and unity-oriented.
That's exactly right, yes. And the other stage is that if they present to the people, what we found is whenever anybody's in the audience and they hear the Wisdom Council speak, the basic response, and they turn their chairs. The Wisdom Council's done, so they don't have any authority. But the audience hears this talk, and then they turn their chairs and talk among their, and then you come back and you say, what did you think? And it turns out that people basically all kind of say, yeah, why aren't we doing that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so it's a way to get unity among a huge population of people, like the entire nation of the United States, or Germany has actually done an example project, low scale, but they've done one. So, but here's a way you ran.
Hold on.
Okay.
We got to go to a break. We'll be right back. We got to go to a commercial break.
But here's a way for taking the conversation to the greater public. And thank you very much. And we'll be right back.
Okay.
Welcome back to the show. We were just talking to Jim Ruff about the Wisdom Council process, and he was going to make another point on the process, and then we were going to take you over to Ryan, who's going to give us an update on the railroad corridor project.
There's a we the people that is the ultimate authority of our society. If somehow we could facilitate everyone to come together in a spirit of choice creating and reach near unity, which is what happened at the founding of our country.
Right now it's a representative democracy, but with the evolution of the technology that's going on, like we just did on the new Apple gear and 5G and all that, we'll be able to be meeting in rooms online and thinking that it's real. You know, when that happens, we will have gatherings for these issues around the world in seemingly like we're meeting. And that will allow these processes to promulgate. And that's in the very near future. That's the next upgrade in the technology, where we can have online group gatherings that have that spark. But right now, you have to do this in person, right? You have to find those 12 people and have them in the same room for the magic to happen. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. For the 12 people. But I'm excited. I'm going to have to go back and listen to your show.
Yes, stay tuned. You know, even the new FaceTime will allow you to have 32 people simultaneously online on your phone. You know, so that's, I mean, that's just...
I don't know how to facilitate that to the level of choice creating, but I do. But that's the key, getting those 12 people together in a room.
And really being there, with each other.
And it's not a bad thing. I mean, it's not that expensive to fly 12 people to one location and take their picture. You know, if we were to do that with a national audience, for instance, that would be our first gathering of a symbolic We the People since the founding, really.
Yeah. Why 12, do you think? Why 12? Do you think that's some special number for our species?
When I wrote my book, I wrote 24 because it was the biggest group you could get. But we don't need that many. It turns out we don't need that many. You can get a higher quality conversation. The group speaks, and they are a symbol of all of us attacking a tremendously difficult problem like the rail corridor issue that you talk about.
Yes.
And then they're gone, basically, but they have a story to tell of breakthroughs. It's like a hero's journey kind mm-hmm. of story. Mm-hmm. And then the audience, the immediate audience, gets it. They identify with this group and realize, yeah. And it turns out that the next layer of the audience also has a sense of identity, too. The broadcast audience can listen to the story, and they can turn and be in their bars or in their red team, blue team gatherings or whatever, and identify similarly.
Yeah, I can see that. Then, everybody has their following, in a way.
That's right. So it's a holistic strategy versus what we've got now, where we just add up the votes, and whoever wins, and they get all the say. This is a holistic strategy where we're all in the conversation. So let's say you're in just the broader audience and you have some kind of reaction like, wait a minute, they don't understand about this 5G or whatever. Then the media turns its attention to you. So you somehow have entered into the conversation, even though you're an outlier
that brought in a piece to the puzzle. Yes,
you brought a piece to the puzzle.
Yes, some new disruptive technology that'll change everything.
I will say, just to clarify, for the Santa Cruz training of learning how to do dynamic facilitation, we have the capacity for around 25 people. So there's still spaces on the training if you want to do it. Wisdom Council is like very selected number of people, but training in dynamic facilitation, we can take more. So that's that piece. And
nice.
Ryan.
Ryan, yes.
Thank you, Karina.
Yes, one other final thing before we go to Ryan. How best to reach both you, Karina, and you, Jim?
So I can say, I'll give you my number, 831-345-1476. I'm local. I'm helping pull this together, and Jim will be flying down to do the training.
Okay. And any emails? Yep.
Karina. karina.1111@gmail.com, and that's corrina twice.1111@gmail.com.
Very good. She knows the drill. Amazing. Yeah. Jim?
And I'm info@wisedemocracy.org.
info@wisedemocracy.org.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. Check out that website.
And I invite you to check out the website,
I shall indeed. Thank you, Jim. Thanks for your insights.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. If you want to stay on the line and listen to what Ryan has to say, you're more than welcome.
He's given us an update on the rail corridor.
Yeah, he's going to give us an update on the rail corridor.
Okay.
All right.
As a little bit of background, the rail corridor decision is being made by the Regional Transportation Commission. The Regional Transportation Commission is composed of a dozen members, primarily elected officials from around the county. However, none of those members of that board are actually directly elected to be on that board. So there's an aspect of the RTC, Regional Transportation Commission, that is somewhat less than direct democracy. It just so happens that there's one ballot initiative, which is in Capitola, it's called Measure L, that directly addresses the question. Other than Measure L, this is all something that's happening in an administrative zone. The Regional Transportation Commission acquired the corridor in 2012, and it acquired it with the specific purpose of putting a train on that corridor. The idea that there is a different solution for the corridor other than a train has been a very difficult input into the process. So, what has happened over the past 6 months is that the Regional Transportation Commission has signed a contract with a freight rail operator to give them the rights to the entire 32-mile corridor for freight and possibly some kind of at least excursion rail, though not passenger rail.
Well, that would eliminate any bicycle, pedestrian, e-vehicle path then, wouldn't it?
It would eliminate the idea that you would take the rails up and put down a paved corridor that would accommodate e-vehicles, bicycles, pedestrians.
Which would be better than rails. And that's one of the big issues. Pull up the rails or leave them.
Yeah, and you know, in terms of the mediated solutions, I was about to bring up, what do you do when the way that the process works is to fill the 12 seats with people who all agree with each other and exclude the other people who don't get a voice, which sounds like what you're describing with this process?
Well, there are divergences of opinion on the board, but the board is in the process right now trying to finalize a pathway that would retain the rails even though there is no money or ability to actually put a train on those tracks. And the decision is going to be made at this point. They've scheduled it for December. So right now, public input is really important. If you have an opinion about this, do contact RTC in Santa Cruz. The contract with the freight operator provides freight in Watsonville, which can be entirely separate from utilizing the lines all the way up to Davenport. If the rails remain in place, then what happens is Santa Cruz does not have what is traditionally known as a rail trail. A rail trail is when you take up the rails and you put in some kind of other transportation corridor, whether it's paved or gravel, so that that corridor can be utilized. And at some point in the future, if the funds and the political will and the logic dictates it, you can then put a train in. The idea that you would leave the rails in place as a blocking mechanism to prevent
anything else
different kind of other solution.
Yeah.
That's somewhat unique to Santa Cruz.
Really creative. Oh, hey, let's keep the train tracks to prevent the future train. That is so clever. Okay.
You know, one of the really interesting things that has happened over the past year is the introduction of the jump bikes in Santa Cruz.
Yes, and those are quite interesting. They could go along the tracks. Quite
they could, popular.
That would. One thing about Santa Cruz is that Santa Cruz has a higher utilization than almost any other place where jump bikes have been put in. People are getting on and off those bikes.
I've noticed that.
As much as 8 times a day, while the averages are 2 times a day in some of the other areas. So the idea that there would actually be a transportation corridor that could move you up and down the county with those bikes without having to cross so many roads, you know, it would be kind of a natural. And Karina has also explored some of the other options, which are actually enclosed vehicles, small vehicles, traveling at low speeds, that are able to both work on that corridor and also leave the corridor so that you take care of the last mile problem.
Yeah, you could move those that couldn't ride their own bikes, though. You could have passengers,
like the little,
basically.
The little self-drive Ollie, it's called.
Self-driving Ollie.
IBM, self-drive, 12 people. Go along the rail corridor, jump off to go to Dominican or Cabrillo or UCSB.
And they're small enough not to interfere with bikes and
exactly. Everything.
Pedestrians. Yeah, micro-transportation in a way.
Yes.
Yeah, very cool.
So anyway, it's a really important issue for us. I think one of the things is that the people who support a train are able to project into the train a whole lot of beliefs that it will solve many problems and it will be very convenient. It will be whisper quiet, as one of the advocates said. And it's very difficult to contrast that with what is actually possible.
Yeah, so that's where the Wisdom Council perhaps will elucidate this and further with looking at new possibilities that could actually happen.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, thank you both for being on the show.
And thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
It's been really insightful, everybody. Thanks for this conversation.
Thank you.
Bye, Karina.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night, Mr. Ryan. Mr. Santoro, appreciate your attention on this. It's a very interesting thing to discuss, and we look forward to seeing some resolution here. I look forward to using that corridor myself on my new electric bike. Can't wait for that.
This is KCO Santa Cruz.
Thanks for listening, folks.
Bye.